This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
Because I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.
Hello and welcome back to Planet Holyrood. I'm Paul Hutchin, political editor of the Daily Record. We've been off air for a couple of weeks due to parliamentary recess, which cynics say is a glorified holiday. I've got no comment to make about that. But joining me this week are Hannah Rodger, who's the chief reporter of the Sunday Mail. And of course, we have our in-house right-wing bogeyman, Douglas Dickey of the Scottish Daily Express. So, look, we've only been back a few days and already there are some pretty major stories broken. And I think the most significant, in my view, would be the one that's broken on climate change. So I don't think that the relevant cabinet secretary has confirmed it as I speak, but it's been widely trailed. I think the BBC broke the story that the aim of reducing greenhouse gas emissions by 75% by 2030 is going to be dropped. Now, this isn't a massive surprise because earlier this year, the Climate Change Committee said that the 2030 target was now unreachable, but still, it's a far cry from the backslapping of COP26 in Glasgow. Hannah, whatever way you cut it, it looks bad.
Yep. I mean, that's the thing, you know, don't make these ambitious targets if you, you know, if there's no possibility that you can meet them. And I think we're seeing that with the Scottish Government on a number of different fronts where, you know, they rush to make ambitious targets or ambitious proposals to either be the first in the UK to do it or the first in the world or, you know, to have some sort of ulterior agenda. And then it kind of backfires on them. They have to do a U-turn or roll back on those promises. And, you know, it just makes them look incompetent, I think, unfortunately. And in this case, it's even more embarrassing because, you know, the Scottish Government is in a coalition, even though they don't, what is it they call it,
Paul? Partnership agreement, cooperative, yeah. Something like that.
Partnership agreement, but yeah, essentially a coalition with the Green Party. And obviously this is completely against what the Green Party stands for. And this is, you know, one of many things that the Green Party is supposed to stand for that has been sort of watered down or had to be abandoned by the government. And, you know, the Greens are clearly embarrassed by it, but they're very, very good at saying absolutely nothing.
And Hannah, I mean, the 2030 target's been ditched, but I was just reading an earlier draft of the story and it says that the final goal of reaching net zero by 2045 will remain. I mean, the idea that Hamza's going to be First Minister in 2045, I'm not even sure he's going to be First Minister by the end of the year. I mean, it's very easy to set a target for other people to meet. I mean, we're talking 20 years in the future. It just seems like nonsense.
Well, yeah, but again, I mean, that's not a new thing. You know, we see this with governments all the time where they make, you know, 10-year, 15-year, etc. pledges, knowing full well that they might not be the party in charge at that point. So it's not an uncommon thing, but I think that the fact they're still holding on to that target when quite clearly they can't meet the target that they've set for an earlier date, to me it just says that they're setting up whoever's in charge by that time to fail, or they know for a fact that those targets can't be met and therefore they're just setting up the next government for, you know, having to announce, well, we can't meet these targets either.
Dougie, what do you make of the argument that Hamza's only been in for 12 months? So the fact that he's said this is maybe a reflection of the lack of progress made under Nicola Sturgeon than himself. That Nicola Sturgeon, you know, she got her selfie taken with Greta Thunberg, made a big thing about Glasgow being the host of COP26. This is another Sturgeon legacy failure rather than something that is you can point the finger at the current First Minister for.
Yeah, I think that would be fair if Humza Yousaf had attempted to distance himself from his, you know, from his predecessor, but he's very much been set up as, you know, the heir apparent at the time, and he's not really done anything to change that since he's been in office. He was also part of the cabinet, of course, you know, under Nicola Sturgeon, so, you know, under kind of collective responsibility, you know, he's got to take the responsibility for that. He has now said, although Mary McCallum's not made a statement, I think he has now said he's confirmed in Parliament that the story is true, and the 2030 is going to be scrapped. But he's been, you know, adamant about this 2045, and as you say, that's, you know, very soon, possibly very soon, definitely at some point, that's going to be someone else's problem. But it's, I mean, for me, it's a complete embarrassment for him. It's very awkward for him because he was the same one who was, you know, talking about when, you know, the UK government rolled back in its pledges last year. I think he called it unforgivable, I think was the word he used. Mm. Well, if that's unforgivable, then surely this is unforgivable. But, you know, for me as well, the biggest losers, as Hannah's pointed out to us, are the Scottish Green Party, because people now must be wondering, what is the point of the Scottish Green Party? Are they a Green Party at all? Because, I mean, the statement they put out in this was, you know, woolly, and that's being, you know, that's me being nice to them. The simple fact of the matter is that we've got a Green Party in government who see, you know, issues of gender identity as a red line, but scrapping climate change targets, you know, they actually seem to back that. You know, they're backing a government who are scrapping.
They don't think the gender stuff's a red line, though, clearly, because we've already seen all the gender proposals and plans being washed away, and they've done absolutely nothing.
You know. I mean, maybe you're right, but they certainly set that up as a red line issue, but they don't seem to be setting the environment up. I think I've said on here before, I don't believe Scotland has a proper Green Party. I think we have a party that's kind of hiding behind environmental issues. I think some of them are, you know, when they get involved in green and environmental issues, I think sometimes they do okay, but it seems so infrequent now.
Well, I mean, DRS is an environmental issue, isn't it?
Well, obviously that's the one, you know, they're kind of saying that, you know, other people, bad faith actors came out against DRS. DRS, compared to the challenges the world's facing, I would suggest is a bit of a drop in the ocean. DRS will probably happen at some point. The problem with that as well is the implementation of it rather than the policy itself, as we all know.
I've got a slightly different view to you, Dougie. You know, the Greens have been pretty influential in this Scottish government. I wouldn't overstate their influence. They have been influential. I mean, surely, I accept that scrapping these targets is embarrassing. Is it not better to stay in the government and have that influence rather than walking away and just...
But what influence do they have?
Yeah,
what influence have they actually got when all the things that they supposedly stand for are being, you know, the SNP seem to be riding roughshod over it, and they just sit and issue, as Dougie says, woolly press releases, blame other people, and then the things that they're really uncomfortable about, they just ignore. They don't speak about them.
I don't think that is the narrative that's taken hold. I think the narrative over the last 12 months is that the Greens have been wielding the power and been embarrassing the SNP over various policies and initiatives. I don't think folk can have it both ways. They can't say, well, it's the sort of green tail wagging the dog, as it were, but on the other hand, they've got no influence at all. I mean, I think the truth is somewhere in between. I think they are influencing government policy, but it's always better to be in government than in opposition, where you're basically tabling pointless motions and tabling amendments that never get past.
I think it's the issue for some people is what, you know, what they're having influence over, and you know, and they're clearly not having influence over what is their USP, their unique selling point is, you know, the environment, stopping climate change, and it's clear here that they're not having influence. They should, whereas they do have influence over, you know, the way the SNP went with gender identity. I mean, that played a massive part on in Nicola Sturgeon stepping down. I think as First Minister, that was Green influence. But hearing the one thing where the Greens should be exerting influence, and they should be using their influence, they don't seem willing to do so. In terms of staying in government, Paul, I'm sure you were, you know, every bit as forgiven to the Lib Dems for going into coalition with the Tories in 2010.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, I didn't
absolutely
think so.
Not.
Surely it's better to be in government, you know.
Well, I mean that's a fair point, but I don't think the Lib Dems had any influence at all in that government. I think they got comprehensively shafted by the Tories.
What have the Lib Dems ever done for us?
Well, they gave us the bedroom tax, so thank you, Liberal Democrats. That was a really good one, and various other bits and pieces. But Hannah, do you think the 2030 target, was it just too ambitious in the first place? I mean, you look at what the government's positions are on things like aviation and like road building, and they don't seem to be making the big transformational changes that will...
Well, no, and that's close the point. To that. That's the point. I mean, you can't...
Wasn't the target the problem in the first place? It was just hopelessly unrealistic.
Well, yeah. I mean, what is it? 75% reduction by 2030. And we're at 2024. I mean, that's... you know, I'm not an expert on climate change, but we know that, you know, the whole problem with this issue is that making a difference takes a long, long time. And it's about, you know, small and large changes cumulatively will hopefully have a beneficial effect. But it does take time. And I don't see how, as you say, any of the things that have been done could have kind of reached that target by that point. So, yeah, I do agree. It was too ambitious in the first place.
I mean, it's a target they set themselves. So if it's too ambitious, they've only got themselves to blame. But I'm quickly use one example. But for me, you know, if we're going to move to a net zero, we need to invest in things like public transport. But, you know, loads of councils would rather just stick in needless cycle lanes because it's cheap and then tell people to cycle to work. This is one of the problems. And listen, I say that as someone who uses cycle lanes, who does cycle. Well, the weather was a bit better, but they're not willing to make, you know, spend the money where it's actually needed, which is improving, you know, public transport networks. People in Scotland can't cycle everywhere. It's too, you know, it's too wet. Let's be honest here. It's too wet, too cold.
Well, it's too wet, but also the state of the roads.
Aye, but you know what we need is, you know, great bus services, great train links. That's what the country needs if we're going to move to net zero. Yeah, instead of that, they just turn in and say, "We'll stick in some cycle lanes, and you can cycle to work." It's just not good enough. It's just window dressing.
Part of the problem as well on that sort of issue, if we're talking about transport, is, you know, as you say, put in sort of a patchwork of cycle infrastructure that's not really joined up, doesn't really work very well, and then they also kind of seem to penalise people who do use cars with like the LEZ, the raising of parking fees, etc. But then, you know, there's not really a viable alternative. So you're just penalising people and making them annoyed instead of someone saying, like, for example, I drive and I could take the bus quite a lot. But, you know, if I go to the bus stop, I could be waiting 45 minutes for a bus to turn up because it just, you know, it's so such an unreliable service. So, you know, there aren't these alternatives to make the choices easier for people.
So in conclusion, yet more depressing news coming from St. Andrew's House.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Moving on to the Hate Crime Act. Now, I'm not going to rehearse every single line that's come out over the last 2 or 3 weeks, but there was an attempt by the Conservatives to repeal the Act. Yeah, failed. Clearly, there are problems with implementation and communication, and the issue that Murdo Fraser raised about the recording of non-criminal incidents. But Dougie, do you not think that scrapping this Act seems like a massive overreaction? I mean, this Act does give people some protections. It also includes the aggravation of crimes based on protected characteristics. Surely there's a more subtle approach than simply repealing it.
Well, I mean, I don't think that motion, you know, or the vote was ever designed to scrap it. It was, you know, a typical bit of political, you know, tomfoolery in some ways. You know, the Act was never going to be scrapped because the SNP have the numbers. So, you know, no one thinks it's going to be repealed, but it keeps it in.
I do.
Well, I think it's going to be repealed anytime soon.
I
noticed one SNP, MSP refused to roll out repealing it on debate night last night. But I think this, you know, this vote, I think, was designed, you know, from a Tory perspective. It keeps it in the news. The Tories are strong on this. They seem to be in line with public opinion. Humza Yousaf's uncomfortable on it because he's out of line public opinion, and he just accuses, you know, he kind of accuses folk who are against it of being bad faith actors and right-wing zealots, when actually it's your, you know, it's your average punter on the street is just confused by it. And in the same debate night, you know, Jane McCarry, who played Isa in Still Game, was, you know, criticised that even Isa, who I'm sure would have loved to have grassed up her neighbours to the police, can't get her head around it. I think as well the vote was probably designed to put a bit of pressure on Labour as well, who obviously backed it in the first instance.
It's not a bit of hypocrisy here from the Tories, though. You know, they're great champions of free speech in Scotland, yet in London and down south they're trying to clamp down on protest.
I think, you know, there comes a point where everyone agrees that a line has been crossed, you know, but the laws to deal with that were already there. I think that's my biggest issue with the Hate Crime Act, is these laws were already there. The clamping down south, obviously, is, you know, has been widely criticised. It's in a situation where things are tense at the moment down there, in terms of the Gaza situation. That's obviously, you know, partly why it's been brought in. You know, the Scottish Tories aren't always the UK Tories. I don't think there is. You know, I think it's two different issues. The Hate Crime Act's obviously a mess. And it's something the SNP are real uncomfortable on. And I think, I
agree that it's about putting pressure on Labour as well, with Dougie. I mean, they want to flush them out because obviously they've been quite quiet over the last couple of weeks, not really wanting to put their head above the parpet.
I'm making a mistake, you know?
Yeah. Hannah, you said that you thought that that might actually be repealed one day. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, to me, it's very similar to the offensive behaviour at football situation. And, you know, that was accepted as a total disaster. And, yeah, it was ultimately repealed. So I think that it could go the same way. I think one of the big problems as well with this Hate Crime Act was the decision not to include misogyny within it, because that's obviously contributed to the ongoing divisions between, you know, gender critical feminism and transgender activists. And, you know, I think by if you included misogyny in there, it would have taken away some of those arguments that we're seeing now. But also I think that, I just think that the way that it's been communicated, the clear mishandling by the police, I think the misinstruction from the police, like all sort of our reporting on it, and from what I have learned from speaking to people, is that the police aren't even confused about how they prosecute this and how they deal with this sheer number of reports. And the fact that there's posters up everywhere telling people to report hate crimes, you know, of course they're going to get thousands of reports, and they've said publicly they're going to investigate every single one. You know, and to be honest, quite frankly, I think it's ludicrous that Police Scotland are maintaining that this is having no impact on frontline policing when we've got, you know, the Scottish Police Federation and others saying the exact opposite. You know, but the police are in a very difficult situation too, because they didn't make the law. They're just there to enforce it. Doesn't matter if they agree with it or not, but quite clearly I think that, you know, it's left them in a really difficult situation.
Hannah, do you think, has this become another sort of proxy battle for the trans issue?
Oh, aye. Yeah. I mean, 100%.
Say the Hate Crime Act had simply extended the hate crime provisions to, I don't know, people who are elderly on the grounds of age. I don't think...
But that was already included.
Well, no, I mean, in terms of consolidating it, in terms of the stirring up, so say it was like a fairly uncontroversial protected characteristic, I don't think it would have received nearly the same coverage.
No, I don't... Well, exactly, I don't believe it would have, in the same for, you know, race or, I don't know, even sexuality. I don't believe it would be the same, but because it's an area that includes the protection of transgender people, that's always, for some reason, pitted against the rights of women, and then it descends into this, you know, this mess. So, yeah. I'm not saying it's purely, you know, the problems with the hate crime are not just purely because of the transgender, you know, debate, but I think that that's been a huge focus of it. And then there is obviously the free speech element too, which can extend to other things.
Just on hate crime, I mean, I was at the STUC in Dundee this week. The First Minister gave a speech. He mentioned the hate crime controversy, as you'd expect. But I thought that Ros Foyer's comments to me were quite interesting. I'll just read you out. This was an interview with The Record. She's talking about the Scottish Government's record more generally. Now, a bit of background. The SDUC, before Ros Foyer took over as General Secretary, was kind of accused of being too close to the government, that they pulled their punches. But since Ros Foyer took over, I think they've been much more critical, particularly over the lack of progressive policies, or at least not matching the rhetoric with policies that match up. Now, this is what she said to me about the Scottish Government. They need to take responsibility for the powers that they have here in Scotland and stop blaming Westminster. I'm only going to accept the blame Westminster argument when I know they have exhausted every possible avenue within the powers that are already devolved to them, and I don't believe they are doing that. What do you make of that critique, Hannah, of the Scottish Government?
Well, I mean, Ros Foyer has said that before, you know, and I think that it's a fair comment. I do think that the Scottish Government jump to blame Westminster at any opportunity. You know, we can see that with the DRS, whether, you know, you think it's Westminster or the Scottish Government to blame. You know, I would say it's probably a bit of both, but the fact the Scottish Government takes zero responsibility for that, You can say the same with the post office. I feel like the post office scandal is just going to be a repetition of that, where it's all Westminster's fault that, you know, the Scottish postmasters are going to take longer to have their convictions quashed. There's just a lot of blaming going on. And in terms of what Roz is saying about, you know, them not exhausting all of their, you know, their options in terms of the powers that they have, I also agree with that, definitely.
Dougie, you see, if you look at from 2007 onwards, when SNP started to replace Labour as the main party, it started pretty slowly. They had a 1 or 2 seat majority in 2007. Then they got the big majority in 2011. And then, of course, after the referendum, there was the sort of flood of support from Labour to the SNP. So if you read Rose's comments there, do you sense that those Labour voters who put their trust in the SNP are beginning to become disenchanted and that they're getting impatient and frustrated?
Yeah, I mean, one of the big things is, for me, is criticism from a body like the STUC. I mean, that's a massive blow to somebody like Humza Yousaf, who wants to present himself as the progressive face of Scotland. So when you've got, you know, this massive body which kind of embodies that, you know, those left-wing views, being so critical of them, it's not a great, you know, it's not a great look. And I did notice in another story, Roz Foyer was talking about, you know, what's going to happen when there's a Labour government at UK level, and she seemed quite, excited at that prospect, or certainly more excited at the prospect of that than what we've got now. So I think it is a blow, you know, that is a blow to the SNP, and I think it is an indication that those who have put their faith, or, you know, those on that side of the political spectrum who have put their faith in the SNP are beginning to wonder, especially those who, you know, and, you know, believe it or not, probably the majority, the constitution isn't the big issue, you know, the big issue that's facing people. So they've maybe, you have soft independent supporters who've given their vote to the SNP, but not particularly because they wanted, you know, they're desperate to see the breakup of the UK, but because they think the SNP were best placed to take forward what they've seen as Labour values. But in some ways, 16 years of government, it's hard to keep, you know, it's kind of hard to keep that support at that level.
Are these the sort of key voters in Scotland just now, the sort of the soft independence supporters who maybe switch from Labour to the SNP under Nicola Sturgeon from 2015 onwards, that, you know, we're seeing quite a chunk of them go back to Labour?
I mean, also, I think you've got soft unionists as well, who have probably lent their vote to the SNP in the past, who thought it was safe to do so, especially before 2014. You know, I know people who were, or who are still unionists, who thought, you know what, even though I don't want independence, I'm not voting for that, I'm voting for a party to take over, you know, the NHS, to take over, you know, issues of local, you know, local government funding, who thought it might have been safe to, you know, lend their vote. But now you've got a situation where Humza Yousaf's tying every vote at the general election to independence. So you've got those people who, you know, aren't going to lend their vote to the SNP anymore, and you've got those soft independence ones. I think ultimately it's the soft independence ones that will determine the election. And right now, you know, they realise independence wouldn't be, you know, wouldn't solve all Scotland's problems. So why don't we solve the problems we can solve in the meantime? And the SNP are kind of failing miserably to achieve that. So I think, you know, that's why you're seeing this shift back to the Labour Party.
Okay, just wrapping up. Good week, bad week, Hannah, starting with you.
Do you know, I've completely forgotten who I had picked. So good week, I've gone for Gordon Brown, because I think he did a really interesting sort of interview with the FT this week. He's been kind of doing a couple of interviews over the last few weeks with sort of some of the national papers, and is has won. The stuff he was talking about in the FT this week was about, you know, how, like, basically austerity and how the situation is not great for particularly children and poverty. And he was also talking about the fact that he's setting up these sort of multi-banks, he's calling them. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like food banks, but for non-food items. And I just think that, oh, and also he got a mention at PMQs this week, which, you know, is not not a bad thing for any former prime minister. But I think, you know, Gordon Brown is, in comparison to, for example, Liz Truss, who's going about touting this nonsense book that she's written, you know, I think he's just a pretty good example of someone who, you know, yes, when he's got something to say, he will say it. He's also spent a lot of time, you know, since he left Number 10, actually trying to make things better for people. And I think, you know, the work that he does around food banks, particularly in Scotland and in England, is kind of commendable. So yeah,
I think he is the sort of model for how to conduct yourself out of office.
Well, so I mean, he's like the perfect example of a former prime minister, unlike Liz Truss, who's just being an absolute idiot right now. But I did
what
quite
do you mean,
like
right now, right now. Hasn't she always been?
No, I mean, I interviewed her when she was, what was she, business? I think she was involved in business, and she didn't come across as a total maniac, whereas now she just, I mean, you know, I'm expecting her to join forces with Donald Trump at some point. I don't know. She's just lost the plot entirely. But yeah, so anyway, my good week, Gordon Brown. Bad week is, unfortunately, transgender people, because, well, once again, they find themselves being discussed left, right and centre, which, you know, I know is really difficult for people who are transgender, having themselves in the headlines, but also, you know, the cash review, the fact the Scottish Government has remained basically silent on this issue is creating quite a lot of, you know, worry and concern for them. And then obviously today we found out that the Sandyford has paused referrals to their paediatric service as well in Glasgow. So that's, I think, you know, it's just quite a concerning time for members of the trans community in Scotland.
Dougie?
So I'll start with bad week. And it's on it's for teenagers. It's been a bad week for teenagers planning on taking up smoking. This is obviously because the UK government voted through a ban on cigarette sales to people born in or after 2009. It's caused a bit of a ruckus at Westminster. It's likely we'll see something similar up here. So even though it's a Westminster story, I thought it was relevant to Holyrood headlines, Planet Holyrood. It's quite an interesting one. It sparked a bit of a Tory rebellion down there. They were offered a free vote on it. Kemi Badenoch was among those to vote against it. I actually felt, you know, hands up here, I absolutely hate smoking. I was thinking about the time before the smoking ban, and you know how you would go into clubs and pubs, and the next morning your clothes would be absolutely stinking, although it did mask certain other odours that emanated from people in those boozers. But, you know, thinking back to then and thinking how different things are now. But I think, I actually thought Kemi Badenoch made quite a good point about, you know, differentiating rights of people born a day apart, and, you know, to ban someone permanently from doing something that someone born 24 hours beforehand would, you know, still have the right to do. So it's quite an interesting debate, and I'm sure we're going to see, you know, something similar up here. For good week, I almost picked Liz Truss because her book's actually flying quite high in the bestseller list. So
is it really?
I'm not going to, whether you agree with her or not, someone clearly is interested in what she's got to say, and you know, hidden amongst some of the worst excesses, there is some wisdom, I'm sure, in there, but
we were like great time in number 10, which was what, 6 weeks or something. She changed the economy and destroyed things for people.
I certainly think some of it's nonsense, but she does make some good points about civil service, I think, and unelected officials and whatnot. But anyway,
is that the deep state that's
the deep state that's behind everything.
It's been a bad week for the deep state who've been called out. So moving on. I didn't actually pick Liz Truss. I picked Megan Gallagher, MSP. She's also the deputy leader of the Scottish Conservatives. So she's been kind of leading the Scottish Tory response to the cash review, which Hannah was alluding to or talking about earlier. And whether you agree with her on it or not, I think she's made life very uncomfortable for the government. I think she's made the government weak on it because, they were kind of deferring this decision to clinicians who obviously today have kind of made that decision to, not prescribe these puberty blockers. So it's a bit of a victory for her. And I think Megan is, positioning herself when Douglas Ross blows the full-time whistle in his time as Scottish Tory leader. I think Megan Gallagher is now positioning herself.
Like there's a bit of a queue for that job.
Do you reckon Megan Gallagher versus Russell Finlay?
Versus Jamie Green?
I'm
not saying he would win. I'm saying that I'm pretty sure he would want it.
I think Megan versus Russell Finlay is a definite, if anyone else wants to pitch. But I think she's emerged as one of the Tories.
Sandesh?
Along with Russell Finlay, she's emerged as one of the Tories.
He wants to go. Sandesh wants to go down the road to Westminster.
Well, it doesn't stop him from having the two jobs, does it?
I think he's already said that he will stand down as a List MSP, should he, in the unlikely event, win the Westminster.
Well, he says that now. Anyway.
Imagine we had a former Sunday Mail investigations editor leading the Scottish Tories, Hannah. How would that make you feel?
No comment at all. My cat is so horrified he's jumped up to say, no!
still the most surprising thing I've heard in 10 years, Russell Finlay is a Conservative. I'm not convinced it's true, but look, Russell, that's the badge you're wearing. So,
On that note,
thank you again. I really wish Rishi Sunak would just call the election. I feel like we're all on standby waiting for this thing to happen. So if the Prime Minister is listening, I'm sure he is, just get this out of the way so we can go on with the rest of our lives, okay? I hope you enjoyed the show. Join us again next week. Thank you.
It's important we look at the facts.
Why? Why?
Douglas Ross is sounding pretty scared.
I believe in independence.
And he clapped like a seal.